I want you to invite you to stand for just a moment. We're going to do just a small bit of aerobics this morning. Get yourself centered for a moment.
Okay.
Both, all your weight on your both feet. Just sort of rest, okay? And we're going to take two really deep breaths in, okay? Ready? Through the nose. Hold it. We're going to do one more. Wonderful. Please be seated. I felt like the best way I could illustrate what it feels like for me this morning after our vote last week. If you were with us, I hope that you can say that you truly experienced that as a beautiful time of worship and a moment in which we saw God at work. I hope that you can say that you felt that, even if the vote didn't correspond with what you put on your ballot, right? The vote was, for those of you who weren't maybe able to be with us, the congregation voted 95.5% in favor of being dismissed from the PCUSA to ECO. And that number, frankly, was important to me because it is the largest yes vote of all the congregations in the Presbytery of San Francisco to have sought dismissal. I wanted that vote, and I wanted a result like that, not so that I could pat myself on the back or we could pat ourselves on the back and say, we're right. Ick. Right? Nobody needs it. Nobody needs that at all. But what I did want was a clear sense that God was in this. A clear sense that the thing that we had committed ourselves to at the beginning of this process, namely that we would live into the unity that God has created in us so that we can live that unity out in our mission in the world, I wanted to make sure that the vote represented that. And I am just really grateful to God that that is so. That being said, it is valuable for me and important that I would say one more time that unity is not the same as unanimity. We don't all have to agree 100% about everything, and we don't even all have to agree 100% about this. And there were people who didn't agree that we should leave the denomination. Now, as I talked to people afterwards, people would approach me and tell me stories, and they would say, oh, pastor, I was talking to some folks, and they don't come to church that often, but they were with us that Sunday, and they got their ballots, and so we asked them how things, you know, about their vote afterwards, and they said, oh, we didn't understand what was going on, so we voted no. Okay, well, this was what was going on, the person would say, and they're like, oh, I should have changed my vote. That happens, right? That's democracy for you, friends. My point is that the no votes that we got come from different places. Some of us voted no because we didn't understand. Some of us voted no because even though we may have thought that it was right and appropriate that we should take a new step and go into a new denominational experience, that the amount of money involved just didn't feel right to them. And some people felt like, hey, this is just not what we should do. We don't agree. Wherever you are on that, I want you to hear from my heart that Walnut Creek Presbyterian Church is the same church it has always been. That our commitment to this mission is the same as it has always been. And that if this change means anything for us, it means that we can be who we are more than we've been up till now. We believe that being part of ECO is going to help us to do that. And I want you, regardless of how you voted, or even if you did vote or didn't vote, I want you to be in that with me. I want you to be in that with us because it's a new day. We took a deep breath and we breathed it out. And we took a deep breath and we breathed it out. And now we get to start something new. Amen? It's an exciting time. And I am very privileged to be able to be in it with you. So we're continuing our consideration of the way in which God gets a new start for the people of God in Ezra Nehemiah. And if you remember, last week we looked at the first few verses of chapter 5, in which the people of God heard very clearly from the Lord through the prophets Haggai and Zechariah that they should start the work over again. They'd put the work off for 16 years, and so they are going to start over. And so they begin the work, and chapter 5 describes them starting the work over again. At the end of what we read, the local officials noticed that this work had resumed, and they got freaked out about it. And so they immediately rush up to the project, and they say, "Hey, what's going on here? Let's see your permits. Who authorized this? I don't have this in my binder." They get all freaked out, right? And so they make a fuss about it, and they want to know who authorized this work, and they want to know who the contractor is, and who the project lead is, and they want to talk to the architect, and they want to know who's in charge, because they're really, really agitated about this. And what's interesting is that the answer that the Jewish leadership gives to them isn't, well, you know, there's Josiah and here's Zerubbabel and you guys can talk to these guys. No, what they say instead in unity is that we are the servants of the God of heaven and earth. You want to know who we are? We are the servants of Yahweh. That's who we are. And what are we doing? We're doing what he told us to do. We're doing what he told us to do because our ancestors blew it. They blew it and they rejected Yahweh. They didn't follow his laws. They didn't keep covenant with him. And so he came through, and using the agency of Nebuchadnezzar, this temple was destroyed. And all the sacred artifacts inside of it, all the beautiful things that we use to celebrate worship together, all that stuff was taken away back to Babylon. And our best and our brightest, they were taken away too. Who are we? We're the servants of God. What are we doing? What God told us to do. Why are we doing it? Because we blew it. And God's giving us like a second chance. That's their answer. And I think that's a valuable thing for us to consider. Because if we get the first questions right, who are you? What are you doing? And why are you doing it? If we get really centered on those things well and say, I am a servant of God. My life is about doing what he wants me to do. And why am I doing it? Because that's the thing he called me to do, and he gives me second chances. If we get that part right, friends, everything else, sort of all the other big questions, all the other problems, all the other challenges, all the other confusions, all that stuff, it pretty much sorts itself out. And as we look at this text this morning, I want us to see how that happens. So they say, you want to know who we are? This is who we are. We're the servants of God. This is the project we're doing. And if you want to know if we're authorized to do that, then you can tell King Darius to go check the records. Because if he checks the records, he'll see that King Cyrus commanded us to do this. And we're going to go back to work. And so they do. They go back to work, and the officials write a letter to King Darius and say, oh my gosh, you'll never believe it. These people are doing this, and you know, you should be aware of this. So they send a letter. The governor of the Trans-Euphrates, his name is Tattenai. Tattenai sends a letter to the king and says, hey, I want to make you aware of this. And then they get the letter back from the king, and that's where I want us to pick up the story this morning in Ezra chapter 6, starting at verse 3. So Darius says, I checked the records, and yep, it is exactly what they said it is. Yep, I checked the records, and in fact, Cyrus did give this order. So here's what I'm instructing now. King Darius says, let the temple be rebuilt as a place to present sacrifices, and let its foundations be laid. It is to be 90 feet high and 90 feet wide, with three courses of large stones and one of timbers. This is when it gets interesting. The costs are to be paid by the royal treasury. Remember, that's exactly what Cyrus had said. I want you guys to rebuild the temple to spec. Go back to the old plans, rebuild it, we'll pay for it. Then, he says, also the gold and silver articles of the house of God, which Nebuchadnezzar took from the temple in Jerusalem and brought to Babylon, are to be returned to their places in the temple in Jerusalem. They are to be deposited in the house of God. Now then, Tattenai, governor of Trans-Euphrates, and Shethar-Bozenai, it's not Bonsai, I just like to say it that way, Shethar-Bozenai, and you, their fellow officials of that province, stay away from there. Do not interfere with the work of this temple of God. Let the governor of the Jews and the Jewish elders rebuild this house of God on its site. Moreover, I hereby decree that you are to do for these elders of the Jews in the construction of this house of God. The expenses of these men are to be fully paid out of the royal treasury from the revenues of Trans-Euphrates, so that the work will not stop. Whatever is needed, young bulls, rams, male lambs, or for burnt offerings to the God of heaven, and wheat, salt, wine, and oil, as requested by the priests in Jerusalem, must be given them daily without fail, so that they may offer sacrifices pleasing to the God of heaven and pray for the well-being of the king and his sons. Furthermore, I decree that if anyone changes this edict, a beam is to be pulled from his house, and he is to be lifted up and impaled on it. And for this crime, his house is to be made a pile of rubble. May God, who has caused his name to dwell there, overthrow any king or people who lifts a hand to change this decree or to destroy this temple in Jerusalem. I, Darius, have decreed it. Let it be carried out with diligence. I titled this sermon Flipping the Script because that's what happens in the story, right? The people of God have not touched this project for 16 years. In large part because of all the resistance they had received. God comes to them through the prophets and says, you need to get back to work. I've called you to this work. I'm going to be with you in it. I'm watching. Remember what I said last week, right? It's great when we say, it's great to hear God say, he's watching over us. It's another thing when we say, no, God's watching us. He's watching to see if we're going to be obedient, right? And so God, so we've heard that, and then sure enough, more resistance comes. But this time the people of God, instead of folding, they stiffen up and they say, no, we're clear in who we are, we're clear in who God is, we're clear in what we're supposed to be doing, we're doing it. Go check with the king if you want, but we're going to this work. And then suddenly the whole script gets flipped. This governor, who undoubtedly believes that the king is immediately going to do what the previous king had done, which is to say, stop it, we don't trust this, we're skeptical of it, we think there's a problem here. Instead, the king says, nope, I checked the records, this is what needs to happen, and not only do I expect it to happen, but I expect you to pay for it. I expect you to pay all that. I want you to pay the workers. I want you to pay. I want you to cover all their food, their lodging. I want you to handle all the costs of the animals needed so that they can do the sacrifices to their God, just like it was instructed. And if you don't, you're going to pay. Parenthetical. Just sort of a little sub point. Notice the difference between God and King Darius. Notice how God gets his work done. I love you. I'm committed to you. You blew it. We're going to try again. I'm with you. We'll get this done. That's how God relates to us. That's how God demonstrates his lordship to us. King Darius, if you don't do what I tell you to do, I'm going to do bad things to you. I'm going to hurt you. I'm going to humiliate you. I'm going to destroy you. The human power structures that we create for ourselves inevitably default to violence like that. And God never does. That's just not how God rolls. Yes, he'll punish, but he'll never destroy. Yes, he'll correct, but he'll never just eliminate. He's always committed to finding a way to, if in any way possible, to redeem this situation. He's going to do it. And this is what it means to flip the script, as I see it in this story. God flips the script to say, you thought, Jewish leaders, that this resistance was going to come and your whole story was going to be wrecked. Instead, I'm going to use this to get this project off the ground and get it finished and do an amazing thing in your life. See how God propels these leaders forward. Darius says, build the temple, return the sacred objects, make right sacrifices, pray for me and my sons. Do it. You be you. Be the people you're supposed to be. Live fully into your spiritual identity. Go all in for it. Oh, and secular leaders, people who aren't in favor of it, stop getting in the way of it, pay for it, supply it, or else. And so there's a couple things I can imagine God saying. If this were us today, and if God were speaking in a way that we could hear it in a vernacular, I think he would be saying at least these two really important things. The first thing he would say is, I got this. And the second thing he'd say is, I got you. Do you see that? I got this. We use a really fancy word to describe how God's power is expressed and revealed in the Bible. We call it sovereignty. The word sovereignty is this big theological concept. If you know the word sovereign at all, you know that it's connected to royalty, to being a king or a queen. It's ultimate power vested in the ultimate ruler. And so Darius demonstrates his sovereignty, doesn't he? You hear it. Here's my sovereignty. If anybody crosses this, if anybody doesn't do what I say, I will see to it that they get punished in a really profound way. Bad things will happen to you. That's how he practices his sovereignty. But here God, in his sovereignty, says, I can change the whole story. I got this. Have you ever been in a situation where life just didn't look the way you wanted it to? Have you ever been in a situation like that this week? Been in a place where you were pretty sure that no good thing was going to happen out of this. Pretty sure that there was absolutely no possible way that any good could come out of what was happening to you. And I want you to hear this story as a gift to you this morning that says, there is absolutely no story. There is no bad thing that God cannot flip and all of a sudden make to good. There's no story. I just told you the whole Bible. You picked that up, right? I just told you the whole story of the Bible. The whole point of the Bible is this. And the whole of the scriptures point to one singular act, the cross. The cross was the single worst thing that could happen in the universe. God, the one who brought the universe into being out of his expression of love, comes to meet his creation, and that creation turns on him, treats him abusively, comes up with the worst thing they could do to a human being. They hang him on a cross. They torture him and kill him. That's the worst thing that could happen in the universe. Did you notice how what Darius threatens to do is a whole lot like what happened actually to Jesus? Take a big beam, put him up on it. It's the worst thing that can happen. It was the worst thing in history. And yet, every Christian church has a beautiful cross at the center of its worshiping life. Why? Because God took this horrible thing, horrible, horrible thing, and made it for good. He flipped the script. He changed the narrative. He raised Jesus from the dead, and in raising him from the dead said that there is nothing in this universe that can stop me from doing good in your life. There is nothing in this world that can prevent me from bringing good out of bad. That's sovereignty. That's the God we serve. If you don't serve that God, if you haven't put your trust in that God, now would be a good time, because it's never going to get easier. Life is going to continue to be hard. But he will meet you in this. God says, I got this. I think that's great news. Amen? The other thing he says is, I got you. I've got you. I've got you right where I want you. I've got you right in the center of what I'm up to. It's my plan. This is my project. I'm going to get it done, and I'm going to do this for you. I've got you in this. You don't need to worry about it. I got this, and I got you in this. Friends, this is the good news to us today. But there's a bigger question. A really important question that I want us to think about as we go forward now as a church. And the big question I want to ask you is, are you prepared to be surprised? Are you prepared to be really, really surprised in this particular way? Are you prepared to be surprised that God is going to use people to advance his cause that we would never expect? Did you see how that shows up in the story? Up until this point, we've imagined that it's the Jews and the Jews alone. Even they said so, right? This is our project. We don't need any help. We're just going to do this on our own, right? We don't want anybody's help. We're just going to do this by ourselves. And here, God not only flips the script, but he says, no, other people are going to get involved too. The governor's going to get involved. All these people who are actually opposed to the project, they are now going to be major contributors to it. Friends, we need to start having our eyes and our hearts open to the reality that the kingdom of God is breaking out in our community and in our world, and that he is going to use a whole lot of people to get his kingdom work done that are going to really surprise us. Not only us, the people who spend all of our time asking the question, how can I be used by you, God? The people like us, the people who spend every Sunday morning praying to this God and saying, God, use me. I want to be used by you. I want to glorify you. I want my life to be about you. All of us are going to get used. And this story seems to imply that God fully intends to use not only people who don't think that way, but actually people who are totally opposed to it. He can use them too. Next Saturday is Community Service Day. Community Service Day in the city of Walnut Creek. And if you haven't signed up for it, you certainly can. Barbara Frick, I'll bet she's around. There she is. Barbara Frick wants to get a bunch of people to go out and do service, right? The reason Community Service Day is so cool is because it gives us the opportunity to clean up schoolyards with atheists. You know I'm being a little silly, but there are people. We live in a community full of people who are spiritual but not religious. People who really believe that this is as good as life can get. And yet, they're pretty dissatisfied with it. You know why we know that they're dissatisfied with it? Because they want to do Community Service Day. They have a sense that the world ought to be better. Our community ought to be cleaner, safer, more beautiful. They know that life ought to be different. That's our story. We know that. And God, in his sovereign love, when God says, I got this, what really amazes me is he doesn't say, I got this and I'm going to keep it for my church. No, he says, I got this and I'm going to deploy my church out in the world so we can work shoulder to shoulder with a bunch of other people. And in so doing, what do we get to be? As Jesus said, salt and light. We get to be salt and light with them. Pastor Paul and I were talking about this text, and he was reminded of a conversation that he had had while he was on study leave this summer. He was able to talk to a guy from City Church, Church of the Redeemer in Manhattan, and this guy said that City Church in Manhattan is it's a PCA church, a very conservative church, and that as a conservative church, The leadership stands for things that a lot of folks in Manhattan don't necessarily stand for. They believe things about family and about marriage and about righteousness and holiness that aren't shared in the common culture, right? But Church of the Redeemer in Manhattan has committed itself to being out in the world and to serving the community in such a way that says we want the good of the city. We believe being salt and light means we're going to serve the city can flourish and thrive. I hope this sounds familiar to you a little bit, okay? That's the commitment we're into now. That's what we get to do now. That's what we get to do more now because we don't have to keep having a conversation with our denomination about what it means to be the church. We can actually start doing the church. And that's just a great gift. That's where the energy comes from. So Church of the Redeemer, they're out there, they're serving in their community in all sorts of amazing ways, such that their leaders, the leaders of the community will come to them and say, you know what, we don't agree with you on a lot of stuff, but we're really glad you're here. Friends, that's the invitation given to us through the text this morning. It's to live our lives in such a way, to serve in such a way, to give ourselves in such a way that people will not think, oh, you're Christian? I'm really surprised by that. No, they'll know we're Christians. But what their understanding of what it means to be a Christian is going to be completely upended because they're going to say, gosh, I don't agree with a lot of the things that you stand for. I don't even know if I agree with anything that's in the Bible, but I'm sure glad you're with me in this. I'm sure glad you're part of this community. That's what I want. That's what I long for this church to be, a church where we are out in the world in such a way that people say, I don't agree with everything you stand for, but I'm really glad you're here. And as that happens, as we have the opportunity to make friends, with people who see themselves as just people, and as we see them as just people, but people who are hungering for something more, who know that the world ought to be a different way, that we, friends, we get to partner with them. We don't get to give it out to them. It's not in our pocket. We don't have it. Who's got this? God's got this. Not us, God. God's the one who's got it. He's going to resource it. But we get to be in it for his sake with them. That's the new mission. That's the new way of being in the church in the world. And that's why we gather every Sunday morning, so that we can be prepared here and then unleashed, sent out from here to see how God flips the script over and over and over again in the world.